Welcome to Aging in Place, a podcast about the challenges of home and community-based living for seniors and people living with disabilities, and discussing the tools and solutions available to residents of the state of Washington. And welcome back to episode 6. On this episode, we're going to go behind the scenes a little bit and talk about the Money Follows the Person demonstration. This is a program that's offered through the Centers of Medicare and Medicaid Services, and I'm going to be interviewing our very own Julie Cope, who just so happens to work for the Aging and Long-Term Supports Administration here in Washington, which manages Money Follows the Person. Julie, how are you doing?
I'm good. To make things even more complicated, I'm actually the MFP Director for Washington. So
this will be fun. This is going to be so fun. So I thought maybe we should start by just having you talk a little bit more about what the Aging and Long-Term Supports Administration is and your role specifically in it.
Sure thing. So the Aging and Long-Term Support Administration is one of the administrations that reports or falls under the Department of Social and Health Services umbrella. So with ALTSA, there's several different divisions, and I work in the Home and Community Services Division. Money Follows the Person is a federal grant program that is really focused on reducing institutionalization and increasing home and community-based service delivery in the states who choose to participate in the program. So in Washington, Home and Community Services has participated and been a grant awardee since 2007. So we're getting pretty good at using federal funds, I would say, with helping kind of build the whole home and community-based services infrastructure here in Washington. And little toot of the horn here. I think that's why Washington State is nationally ranked in the top two states. We go between 1 and 2 for long-term services and support delivery.
Wow, that's great. So you mentioned grant funding, and a moment ago I mentioned the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Could you talk a little bit about how that federal funding structure works and how states like Washington actually get money from the federal government?
Sure. So CMS offers this Money Follows the Person. So I'm going to use MFP because we use a lot of acronyms, I guess. But this MFP is actually a grant available through CMS. So we have to apply for it. There's a lot of terms and conditions, as one would expect with any kind of federal award, and quite a few reporting requirements to participate in this award program or this MFP program. In Washington State, we already have a pretty great state plan that offers long-term services and supports in home and community-based settings, like, you know, your home or an assisted living facility as examples. And on top of that, in Washington, we have access, or we also have additional long-term services and supports waivers where we can serve more people with some specific care needs in home and community-based settings. Some people know them by name, such as COPES, the COPES waiver, or we have a New Freedom waiver, which is a very client-directed program where folks get like a budget that they can spend on long-term service and support delivery. That's just one example of a waiver. And then we have residential support waiver, which is focused more on providing intensive behavior support services for folks who are in licensed residential settings like adult family homes and assisted livings. Along with all of that, Washington State looks at Money Follows the Person. And by the way, in Washington, we rebranded it. Our program is called Roads to Community Living. We use Roads to Community Living to support individuals in accessing Medicaid dollars available through the grant in a way that our state plan and waivers are unable to serve people. Primarily, home and community-based services are available to those who live in home and community-based settings, right? So like in-home or assisted living, like I was talking about earlier. But Roads to Community Living is an option where we can actually support individuals in that whole pre-transition stage. We can provide services while they're in an institutional setting to prepare them for returning to the community. So this is a different way of Medicaid service delivery than what is currently available in any state plan or waiver. And because we're able to use these funds to kind of front load, if that makes any sense, like to kind of prepare someone for success in the community, we're finding that we have more success in the community and people are able to stay in their community homes longer than if they go straight from the institution, like straight from a nursing home, right to in-home without any pre-planning services.
So I think maybe you've already started to address the next question I have for you. You mentioned the word waiver a lot, and you talked about limitations in terms of being able to get people prepared before transitioning from an institution to a home or community-based setting, which it sounds like maybe wasn't something that was always available. I was wondering if you could maybe just talk a little bit in detail about what some of the problems were with how CMS traditionally funded services and supports that MFP is changing.
So with CMS, long-term services and supports is a requirement for every state who has a Medicaid program. That's every state, right? So long-term services and supports by CMS is funded through Medicaid in nursing facilities. Every state has a nursing facility Medicaid program. Not every state has a state plan or a waiver program that serves people in their homes and in community settings. So the system itself has, just by funding purposes, has this kind of inherent institutional bias. Some states have been very creative. I would name Washington among them in trying to access all kinds of services funding, addressing CMS regulations. We're pretty proactive and actively trying to change and increase and improve access and service delivery to Washingtonians. We've taken a pretty proactive approach. Our state has probably more services and offerings available than other states. There's actually a lot of information online where you can see the ranking or how our state offers multiple kinds of waivers versus other states who maybe have one. And because I think of our proactive approach here in Washington, we've never encountered a wait list for folks to access services in the community where other states do have a wait list. And what that means is folks are in nursing homes for an extended period of time and until they can, they're kind of like their number comes up, and then they can access personal care or other services that they may need in the community. Did that answer?
No, that I think that that's a lovely answer. Before we really get in depth into Money Follows the Person itself, I just had one more question that I'd love for you to expand upon. You mentioned that Washington has been participating in MFP since, what was it, 2007?
2007, that's 2007. Right.
2007, wow, more than 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering if you could maybe just go back and give us just a very short history on when MFP itself was first introduced and maybe who's been participating in it. Is it just a few states? Is it a lot of states? What's that history been?
The Money Follows the Person program, when it first began, states had to apply for the grant. And if anyone has ever applied for a grant, it's not an easy process. There's a lot of documentation required. So there's got to be intent, right, and purpose for applying for it. At its heyday, there were about 44 different states that were participating in Money Follows the Person program. And it was created as a 5-year demonstration, which meant CMS was trying out this funding resource to see if it would help states identify barriers to transitioning from institutional settings to home and community-based settings, and then also see if this type of funding would kind of create opportunities for innovation, for expanding service delivery, expanding access to services, and also trying to create toolkits for states who are maybe new to focusing on transitioning people out of nursing homes into community settings, ways to identify individuals who would be good candidates, tips and tricks and tools to talk with nursing facilities and other stakeholders who participate in the transition process. And the funding allowed a lot of states, including Washington, to try out new services in a way that was lower risk for Washingtonians, like taxpayers, right? So even though we started participating in the Money Follows the Person program here in Washington in 2007, we didn't actually facilitate our first transition on the program using these grant funds until 2008. As I'm sure you can imagine, creating new services, the whole operationalization of some of this work, does take time. So it makes sense why, you know, it didn't happen immediately as soon as the funding was available. But ever since then, Washington has really been able to like increase collaboration, I would say is maybe the best phrase, incredibly collaborative with the nursing facilities and helping them mutually support folks getting back to where they want to be. Because ultimately, adults want to live where they want to live, and folks like options and they like choices on what they want to participate in, what they don't want to participate in. And in institutional settings like nursing facilities, there's a lot of choices that are taken away. Yes, you can choose between two or three meals, but that's very different than having the ability to go to the grocery store and do your own grocery planning, right? Or your, you know, pick what you want to eat. There's structured activities, you know, breakfast is at a certain time, right? So all of those individualized choices are reduced when you're receiving services or care in a congregate setting, like a nursing facility or other types of institutions, like a hospital or even like state hospitals.
Would that include like a rehab facility?
Right. Nursing facilities are often referred to as skilled nursing facilities or rehabilitation centers. I've noticed over the years, a lot of nursing facilities really prefer to not be called nursing homes. The industry has kind of shifted and they're focusing more on providing short-term intensive inpatient rehabilitation services like physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, and intensive nursing services to support like wound care, or maybe someone has just had like a feeding tube placed. And so learning how to get used to this or as they're healing. But ultimately, a lot of nursing facilities are wanting to focus on those rehabilitation services and then help people move back into community setting, which is kind of a win-win, right? So the nursing homes are hoping to do short-term stays, help people return to the community. The state of Washington is also trying to build services and supports so that individuals in nursing facilities have options to return to and continue to heal or get the supports that they need outside of the nursing home. And then, of course, most patients, most clients, most people want to return to their homes. So it's really a win-win-win. And CMS has recognized that. People do better when they get the services that they want in the place that they desire. And Washington has been able to support that with the MFP program.
Well, that's excellent. And you mentioned a few minutes ago that one of the successes of MFP has been that Washington doesn't have any kind of a wait list for people who want to transition out of a institution like a rehab facility or any other kind of nursing care program to go back to their homes or to another community setting. Are there other successes that you can kind of attribute to MFP that you'd like to talk about?
We actually were able to introduce some new support services. I think a lot of folks believe long-term services and supports equals personal care or personal caregiving. And though that is certainly a part of it, there are a lot of other services that can be short-term or of short, you know, shorter duration, maybe just a few months, that help folks return to independence outside of personal care. So I think of things like assistive technology, that's been something that's been added. We've been able through MFP to fund temporary housing assistance for individuals who are maybe have lost a residence or have to move to a different setting to accommodate more like limitations with mobility. So like a first floor apartment is an example, or maybe they're moving into a family member's home and a family member wants to be a caregiver, but they need some accommodations to the house, like a ramp or handrails, a different bathroom setup as examples. And as people move from one setting, like an institutional setting, to a community that is new, MFP also allowed us to create a new provider type or a service that we refer to as community integration or community choice guiding. And that's where we use contracted providers to partner along with the client, the resident in the nursing home, and kind of explore options. So they can go with this provider to a new community, look at apartments, maybe tour adult family homes before they just move there. And that wasn't really something we were able to do before we participated in the MFP program.
So you've talked about transitioning people out of institutions, let's say who've already arrived there. Let's say that I'm somebody who's not in an institution yet, but I'm having trouble living in my house because I can't get up and down stairs very easily, or I've recently lost my driver's license, and so I can't drive myself to the store anymore or drive myself to doctor's appointments. What can MFP do for somebody in a situation like that where they're trying to avoid going into an institution to begin with?
Well, what Money Follows a Person, one of their primary goals and objectives is to reduce institutionalization. The grant is actually does have some eligibility requirements for participants. One is that they have to have a continuous institutionalization for 60 days or longer to be able to participate in MFP. But because we're able to use those grant funds to support folks in returning to the community from institutional settings, what it's done is, as far as like a budgetary standpoint, home and community services can serve about 3 people in the community for the same cost as one person in a nursing facility. So it allows us, MFP has allowed us to serve more people in the community earlier on, which can prevent institutionalization. So in the situation that you were talking about, Tobias, these are individuals who would be able to access home and community-based services, perhaps one of our long-term services and support waivers, earlier on instead of after a medical emergency and a longer-term 60-day institutionalization.
Okay, so my last question is, if somebody is listening to this and they want to know more or want to try and sign up for one of these waiver programs, where should they go?
We have an online presence. So individuals can apply for services on WashingtonConnection.org. Alternatively, across the state, we have home and community services offices that are open. So depending on where you live, there is very likely an office where if you want to have a face-to-face conversation about services and explore options, you can do that. Also, we have on our ALTSA homepage, there's additional brochures and written information about the different long-term services and supports that we can offer in home and community-based settings. So there's a lot of information online. There's availability of having a face-to-face conversation in our offices. And then you can also call any of our offices and talk to a case manager or a public benefit specialist for additional information.
Well, Julie, thank you so much for this delightful conversation. And before we go, are there any final thoughts that you'd like to share?
I would say that supporting people get to where they want to be is incredibly rewarding, and giving people options and opportunities is something that has changed my life and has really kind of influenced my desire to continue to work in this field. Many, many, many years ago, I was a social services director in a nursing facility, and I remember working with residents who did not feel like they had options and that their admission to the nursing facility, like, this is it. This is my life now. And it wasn't very long into that work experience that I started really looking at what other options are available out there. And why is it that I don't know about them being in the industry, right? We had an exceptional home and community services worker that was assigned to our building. And I remember talking to her, sitting down with her and asking her about some different options. And when the opportunity came to work with home and community services and for me to have that role, I was so excited to learn about all of the different options. And even since then, there have been so many additional services that have been added. It's really complicated. It's kind of overwhelming, but it's also so exciting to be able to offer all of these different options for folks. So as a consumer, right, as someone who maybe is thinking about what kind of help would you want to receive as you get older? What kind of things have you seen would be helpful for others? It's important to just keep advocating and asking state lawmakers, local public administrators for these types of services, because there is really a desire to support Washingtonians in in getting their needs met. It's just really exciting to be a part of this for Washington State, to have been able to witness some of the growth and planning. And then also now in this MFP director role, to be able to participate in the next wave of innovative services and new ways that we can support individuals in a more meaningful way. So there's definite interest and motivation to keep on moving and improving so that we can serve our aging population well.
Well, thank you so much for this conversation, and we'll see you next time on the next episode.
Thank you.
Aging in Place is produced by Julie Cope, Tobiah Panchin, and Lee Schuler in conjunction with the Evergreen State College Graduate Studies Program. For additional information, citations, and show notes, please visit us on the web at capstone.panchin.net.